Hey everybody, welcome to Broken Shovel, homesteading for a sustainable future. My name is Lucas. Date of release for this is March the 2nd, Super Tuesday. Get out and vote in the primaries, folks. Fifth. Oh, crap. I didn't write it down.
You've been doing so well with them too.
Yes. Well, and I'm
Yesterday
enjoying.
was the second for all of our listeners that know.
Yeah. Well, we've been, yeah, so Eric is here with me too. So Eric and I have been pre-recording some episodes this week, and I guess I'm just out of sorts. I don't know who I am, where I am, or what I'm doing. But I do know what we're talking about today, and today we are talking about water. Water around the world, water everywhere, water, water, water world.
Water, water, water,
And
water.
yeah,
Which we could do. We
special
could do.
guest Kevin Costner.
Yes. I mean, we could do like multiple. Like, we could do so many episodes on water, because just in the like the three four primary topics that the two of us took, we could probably go off and do single episodes on each one of them.
Probably, yes. Well, let's keep track of that today, because some of this is really fascinating and interesting. We both sort of took different angles. I'm going to be talking a little bit about areas that are threatened by water scarcity. I'm going to be talking about restrictions on water capture, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about the companies that own the most water. And Eric is going to be talking about.
Water itself, usage, the contamination of our water sources, and then going into out of contamination into like the Clean Water Act of 72 and EPA, how they tasked the Clean Water Act to clean up bodies of water and haven't really met their goals. I mean, we'll get into that towards the back end of the
Okay. Well,
episode.
you want to get us started with what is water?
What is water? Water is not wet. Water makes things wet.
Yes, yeah, I thought you would. I always make a little title for our recordings, and Eric has chosen to make some commentary on it. I titled it The Wet.
Yes. Yeah, so the first factoid is that so the Earth is a global. That like so 71% of Earth's surface area is covered in some sort of water. And 97% of that is salt or salinated water, so the total amount is 326 cubic million gallons of water. Or no, it's liters, sorry, liters, because we're Because us filthy Americans in our imperial system.
One of three countries in the world.
Yep. Yeah, and then so out of the 326 cubic million liters, that's 6 million of which is freshwater, and only but 0.5% of that is available for actual use for or is potable for human use, which is only about 1.6 cubic miles of water. Which then in my rabbit hole I went down, I was like, I should write down how many gallons are in a cubic mile of water, and then yeah, my rabbit hole.
Yeah, many gallons in a cubic mile. Wow. Okay. Here's your answer. It's got letters in it.
Oh God, that's a big. So it's a. I mean, it's a lot of water. But the water, compared to how much water is actually water total that we have, what we can use is a very literally a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. 5 cubed. Wow, it's big. I mean, it's a lot. It's
Yes.
it is 1.101 E plus 12 US liquid gallons. And I'm
A lot
not
of
good at.
decimal. That's a lot of decimal points.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
just like you just like just start moving the decimal point down 12 points till
Yeah.
you're way over freaking there. But yeah, it's a lot of water, but compared to how much like salt water there is, it's nothing.
Okay.
Now, water. Let's go to do you want to do usage or water usage or water scarcity?
Well, I kind of want to talk about scarcity first because how this really applies to the topic of climate change and how climate change is amplifying water scarcity around the world, and what areas are most at risk. First of all, we're going to start there. Arid and semi-arid regions, they already receive super low rainfall. They're very prone to droughts, and this is going to exacerbate that problem. It's just going to get worse. Longer droughts, more frequent droughts in these more arid climates. So primary areas are going to be in the Middle East and North Africa, the Sahel region of Africa, parts of Central Asia, Australia. So we're going to see more fires out of Australia, which have been pretty intense. The Hindu Kush Himalayan region, which feeds most rivers in Asia, the Andes Mountains in South America, and the Alps in Europe. I mean, bald Alps, think about that. And then, of course, the Rocky Mountains here in North America, which is going to greatly influence farmland resting below it. The thing that most people don't really think about is these coastal areas and how the coastal areas are going to be affected by water scarcity in climate change, and how this whole thing is playing out is the rising sea levels. And we're going to get increased water scarcity in coastal areas because the saltwater intrusion into otherwise viable water sources. So it's going to contaminate drinking supplies and stuff like that.
Yeah,
Yes, Aaron.
wasn't it last year that, or yeah, last year the Mississippi got so dry that they almost lost, like in New Orleans, they had to shut down a couple of the water treatment plants and actually like almost had like lost a couple because the Mississippi was flowing so sluggishly that the ocean was encroaching in on the Mississippi basin and caused and almost destroyed these deep or water treatment plants because these plants are not equipped to handle salt water.
Well, and I think this is a good jumping off point to usage because, obviously this is giving some scale to this problem, and just how widespread globally this is, which is why we're kind of talking about it today and trying to bring people up to speed. So as far as usage goes, Eric, how do we see this hap playing out?
So this is these numbers are coming from the EPA, the US Geological Survey, and there's crap, what was the other? There's another government organization are where all of my numbers came from. So these numbers are very US specific. So overall, it takes about 332 billion gallons a day to meet Americans' water needs. And that goes into like everything from mining, public, industrial, livestock, agricultural, or sorry, irrigate, industrial for and thermonuclear or
Okay,
thermoelectric.
just
Sorry,
maybe you didn't get a
thermoelectric.
chance. Maybe you didn't get to look at this, but does that include private wells like yourself and me?
It does a little bit in the public. Yes, it does a little bit, but
Okay.
the report I said that is that and this also came up with the potentially how much groundwater is contaminated. The EPA stated in its report, like little asterisk down at the bottom is that they did not they only tested about 20% of private wells available. So it's not, it doesn't, it does, they, so they guesstimated on private wells,
Okay.
to the best of their knowledge.
Okay. All right. So that sort of private public versus private ownership, like rivers, lakes, aquifers, blah, 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 blah. Like, how does that play out into like amounts, like
Amounts. So,
public versus private? Is that in there at
public
all?
versus that, not really, because it really broke down on the type of use, which public
Okay.
being residential, mostly residential type style use, like
Okay.
your rest, even like your restaurants, your home use, et cetera, that comes into public use.
Okay.
And that had about 39 billion gallons a day.
Wow. And then we're talking about like that private use, like mining, we talked about recently, in mining, that water becomes, that adds to the finite nature of water.
Yes, because a lot of that it ends up, I want to comment, I really struggled to find the actual numbers on how much water is made unpotable by mining or other industrial use.
And nuclear use.
Yeah. Nuclear use, I'll go into my contamination in a second, because that actually does cover that. But yeah, just trying to find industrial use, which they call self-supplied, which means they have their own wells or water treatment plants to create the water that they use, uses about 14.8 billion gallons a day. So it's less than the public use, but is still the second highest user of water in America.
Okay.
And then irrigation is another one, which is 108 is the biggest one, which is 118 billion. And then livestock, 2 billion. Thermoelectric, which is power plants, is 133 billion gallons. But that's most, they actually use majority salt water for that, because they've designed those plants to use salt water, which is also why you find a lot of nuclear facilities and thermoelectric facilities near sources of water.
Like Fukushima, for example.
Yes. Okay. For example, yes. Okay. Or like Three Mile Island in New York. Yep. Vermont Yankee, before it was torn down, was on the Connecticut River. We needed to use fresh water instead of salt water, but same usage.
Okay.
So then that runs us into contamination.
Okay.
So the EPA identifies your four primary types of contamination. Physical, which is your sediment type contamination, like what you can see contamination, like your water gets cloudy and such. That is physical contamination. Okay. Then you go into the chemical contamination, which also can have physical appearance, but also cannot have physical appearance. Like you can have perfectly clear water and actually have it contaminated with different types of heavy metals or radiological elements.
Okay. So is this, and that would cover runoff, dumping, both legal and illegal.
Yes.
That kind of stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
Biological pathogens, bacteria, germs. And then last is radiological, which is your radioactive.
Right. Right. Which we could say both legal and illegal, I would imagine.
Yes. Yes. Oh, which they found that. So another interesting factoid I found is that the EPA actually permits the dumping of chemicals into water sources.
Wow. Yes. Excellent. For funding.
Yep, for funding and such. So about
which means you can buy permission to do it.
Exactly. I couldn't get the exact amount of how much was permitted to be dumped, but there was 14 billion pounds over the permitted amount dumped that is documented by the EPA in between 2011 and 2015. So that's just 4 years, 14 billion pounds of chemicals dumped into water sources.
Gross.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah. And so the EPA applauds themselves because we monitor the releasing of the chemicals, but they're monitoring it. So they know the chemicals are there, but they are not either doing anything about it or they keep moving the goalpost for the thresholds of what is contaminated.
Yeah, they monitor it to the degree that I monitor the sun coming up in the morning. This is just, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So like there's one of the big water contamination events is in Oklahoma. There was a very large region, about 40 square miles, that was used for zinc mining. When the mining was shut down in the 80s, four towns had to be completely evacuated at the government's dollar from their towns. Like, and they can't live there because the water is so contaminated.
Like, fantastic.
Places that the water would come out literally would come out red out of faucets.
Yeah, and you know, we didn't really talk about it in the mining episode, but you know, the effects of fracking on water and you know, having flammable water in your house.
the flammable water situation, because the chemicals, because for fracking to work, if people don't know, it's so they take a water chemical saline, they refer to it as a saline slurry, and then they pump this at high pressure. They heat it up too. They got to get it really hot, and then they pump it into the ground to then it then breaks up the shale, which then releases the gas, and then they suck the water back out, and then they separate out the gas, and then they put the saline solution into storage tanks on site and then leave it.
Gross. Yeah. All right. What else you got?
Let's see. So EPA, the Clean Water, I talked about earlier, the Clean Water Act, how it was a very ambitious set of goals set forth after repeated burnings of both the Ohio and Mississippi River, because they were so contaminated that you threw a match in there and it literally would light on fire.
Yeah.
So they passed the 72 Water Act, which did do a lot to help, but they had the goal of by the mid 80s to have 71% of all surface water safe for potable use, be it drinking, swimming, agriculture, whatever use. As of 2022, 50% of all assessed waterways in America were impaired by some sort of pollution, which is about 700,000 miles of waterway.
Gross.
Yep. And the other thing is why a lot of these companies and whatnot are able to get away with so much is, number one, they help decide what the regulations, testings, and standards are, but also a lot of the systems for testing and the standards for thresholds have not been updated in 3 or 4 decades.
Well, that's just not right.
Yeah, well, and the EPA is... They are legally, by the Clean Water Act, supposed to update these rules, standards, and testings for new technology, new discoveries every 5 years.
Yeah, and we're going to dig into the EPA next week. We've decided next week we'll be talking about the EPA, and we'll get Eric will tell us about that at the end of the show.
And that covers... basically everything. My last little tidbit is like a lot of areas where they found higher levels of contamination is in low income neighborhoods, because these neighborhoods were targeted by these companies for dumping. Because they were low income, they would there was less NIMBYism because they were low income neighborhoods.
Right.
And that goes into environmental racism, which I'd like to actually do an episode later on about just on environmental racism.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic for two white guys to talk about. It sounds like you're done there.
I'm done. I've gone on my, I have talked about how the bad things with water and make me sad.
Yeah, well, I just kind of want to wrap us up in on this topic with, because I even incorrectly used it, private versus public water, and I kind of want to clear the air and kind of talk about water rights real quick, because it is complicated and has a lot of nuances, right? So, it's not accurate, it's not good to make a list of individuals or companies owning the most water sources. Because public versus private ownership, most water sources, rivers, lakes, and aquifers are publicly owned and managed by governments and or local authorities. Water rights and access, the ownership of the water source might be public. Individuals and companies can hold water rights, giving them permission to extract and use specific quantities of water. So, bottled water companies like Nestlé, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, don't own water sources in the traditional sense, but secure access to water sources through land rights and permits. I kind of wanted to make a list.
Lobbying, cough, cough.
I
Sorry,
wanted to make a list of some of the biggest companies, the companies that own the most of these, right? Because that's where my mind was at in thinking about this. So I want to be accurate in that these companies that I'm going to list here in a second, they have water rights. And these water rights are sort of where I start to put on my tinfoil hat about water wars coming.
Well,
And
before you go, so I want to. So, did you cover the so the recent th this past summer the controversy in was it New Mexico or Arizona, where the state had sold the rights to the water use to the Saudis, and then the, but were restricting farmers and residential use to a very minuscule amount, while giving billions of gallons to the Saudis.
No, I didn't go into any specific instances. I really just
Okay.
wanted to have a quick sort of bullet point to give reference to how large water rights is of an issue. I could have drilled in, but that's a whole other thing we could talk about. And water rights, like I have water rights to the water on my property, I guess.
Yeah,
It's
we do. I
my.
think we should do water rights and mineral rights. We should do a combo of those two, because
Okay.
water rights does mineral rights does feed into water rights, because it's the how far down below you legally own.
Yes. So I think that'd be interesting. So it's not accurate. It's irresponsible of me to say ownership. I just wanted to make sure that that is clear, that this is water rights and this is going to lead us down a whole different rabbit hole. But two French companies are the world's largest private water and wastewater management companies. That's Veolia and Suez. Go figure. They operate in numerous countries, managing water treatment and distribution infrastructure through contracts with municipalities. So it goes government, private, and then back to government. It is such a strange structure that it kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, and is that around the world? Gonna now they do they control like treatment plants in the United States as well?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so this is also like the reason why in cities you get charged for water usage is because your water isn't treated by the city. It's a private company that's treating your sewer water and then selling it back to the city, who then sells it back to you.
It's such a bizarre system. There's another French company, Saur, Saur, and then the four most nefarious are Nestle, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Danone. They're all major beverage companies. They hold water rights and sources from very like all over the world, in some very irresponsible setups. But it's and these companies are holding the rights to water, which is not only essential, but like we said earlier, finite. It doesn't just go around and around and around and around the way we some
Used
people
to.
think.
No, I mean, it does. It used to. I mean, the cycle existed and worked until we intervened too much to where we've diverted so much water out of the cycle that it is broken.
Yeah. And, you know, my tinfoil hat is water wars. I think this is going to be a major thing that countries are going to start to go to war over. And I think it's going to start.
Department of Defense says that is one of the things they are gearing up for future conflicts and why they are militarizing / putting bases in areas where there are freshwater sources.
Right. And some of the so basically increased tension and competition, right? Rhetorical escalation, resource nationalism, and increased militarization, which Eric is talking about, building up military presence near shared water resources or along borders can be a sign of heightened concerns and potential for conflict.
Ava would be kicking us right now because she would probably just be able to go on a whole tangent on like how the U.S. and the U.S. hedge money is already building bases and controlling water sources around the world and is already strategically deploying itself in ways to continue controlling water sources and among other things.
Well, I have here, you know, that if institutions responsible for managing water resources and resolving disputes become weak or ineffective, it creates a power vacuum and an increase in vulnerability to conflict, right? So, and disagreements on the management or control of dams, canals, other water infrastructure can also become potential flashpoints.
Mm-hmm. We already deal with this, even in Vermont. We deal with this in the dams on like, yes, because the dams are privately operated. But then when the dams go under, like there's upwards of it's somewhere between 1,000 and 4,000 abandoned dams in Vermont alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because they basically, and the thing is these companies would put these little dams in for mills and other stuff. And then they'd go out of business. But they wouldn't take that infrastructure back out of the rivers, streams, retention ponds, etc. And then it became down to now the EPA and the government, which Vermont has also in turn spent a lot of money removing these dams and have tried to go after these old companies that are defunct or evolved, had their rights sold, etc.
Mm-hmm.
over time to try to recoup the cost of, hey, you did this damage to the environment. Please pay to help fix it.
Yeah. And finally, where I believe most conflict will start is increased local competition and violence. Everybody needs water. And so people are going to fight over land, resources, livelihoods, which is going to start with displacement and localized violence. And also the instrumentalization of water, using water as a weapon.
I would actually use Gaza as a good example right now of the opposite of what you just described, of people being displaced from a region and then stressing the existing population's water resources, creating conflicts between both the existing population and this new refugee population that is going in.
Right, using water as a weapon, deliberately cutting off supplies to other groups is another potential flashpoint.
Yep.
And then in the same vein here, exploitation of vulnerable communities, marginalized groups.
Environmental racism, which we're going to do another episode we're going to try to do on, because it's both the Global South, EPA is finding a lot of Superfund sites and contamination sites are in these low income or neighborhoods of color because they didn't have the tools or teeth to fight back against, or they were bought off. A lot of in West Virginia, Virginia, Pennsylvania, these communities were paid off to allow their water sources to be contaminated.
Yeah. And I want to say, I don't hope that this happens. I don't necessarily think it could come fully to fruition, but these are warning signs, and addressing water scarcity through practices of sustainability, of water management is really important right now. Yep. And everybody talks about warming temperatures and all of that, and that's connected to the water too. We talk about this all the time.
Yep. So actually there is good, a little shining beacon of hope in the water usage direction. Overall, since 2015, the water usage in the United States has been in the decline.
Okay, but that seems like a red herring is in there, because if Nestle is pulling water and bottling it and selling it, then of course our water usage is going to go down. But it's going to be,
this is overall global. This includes them. This includes,
but if they're bringing water in from South America to.
Yeah, no, this numbers are specifically for like American usage, not talking about water coming in. Like, we are overall like industrial, private, okay. All of it is on the decline.
Okay. I'm
not
just saying
like, out, but it is on the decline.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, and I was going to talk about water capture, but I don't think that it really fits into this right now. I think that's something that'll come up. Maybe we can talk about the different methods of water capturing on a homestead. I think that would be a lot of fun in an episode, one of our pre-records maybe, because it's really just a fun topic as opposed to this that we've been talking about today. Yes.
We didn't really get into specifics of like, a lot of the bad things that are happening, like the mining and the ash pond or the potash ponds contaminating. And yeah.
Well, and we covered some of that last week in the mining episode.
We did, yes.
So, and as we're transitioning here to talk about the our homesteads and everything, I want to talk about last week's episode really briefly, because I'll go through and I'll watch the video to make sure neither of us are like picking our nose or anything like that. Not that I'm going to do anything about it, but I just want to know. And my body language when you were pissing me off was so agitated. It's got to be disorienting if you watch us on YouTube, because you just got under my skin at one point, and I just, yeah, it got heated, as far as it gets heated between Eric and I, you know, which isn't very heated, but that was an interesting and fun episode to record, because we disagreed. Hey, so it's an absolutely gorgeous day out, right? It's March 3rd that we're recording this. It's beautiful out. I think it's around 50 degrees here right now. And I'm starting to think that little groundhog was right. I know you're a little more pessimistic than me.
Yeah, I'm always pessimistic, especially, I mean, after last year, it's one of those like...
I know, but I need this.
Yes, like you would, but also for me, because I'm on a northern facing slope,
right.
There's literally like, yep, it's nice out. There's absolutely nothing I can do other than look at it, because
yeah,
I still have a ton of snow, and my spots that aren't snow, it's mud. And it's just like, yeah, I can kind of shuffle things around a little bit and start looking at ideas for my plans. But for the most part, it's like, yep. It's warm, it's nice, but it's still March.
yes, it is still March. I can hear the chicks as we've been recording. How are they?
They are doing well. They're doing very well. I have one that has started. It sits up on top of either the water or the food feeders.
Yeah.
And it just sits there.
And did you start planting seeds this week?
I got things out and ready. I'm still debating my ratios. Because my pods are, they're a 3x4 containers. So what I was thinking was a 2-to-1 ratio, like 2 tomatoes to 1 pepper.
Okay, yeah, that's reasonable.
But yeah, that was this afternoon's project, because it's a whole thread I pull on with this, because I have to get the table that has all my house plants reorganized to get these my starters on. In front of the window that mm-hmm. has the good light to actually make it so they'll grow.
Right. I went out and got a new shelving unit yesterday at BJ's. Really good deal on like a, you know, 6-foot tall, 4-foot wide wire shelf. We always do this. And then we reintegrate it into another part of the house, and then we get another one the next year. It's a little wasteful, but it's what we do. And I'm putting that together today.
Nice.
We're sort of upgrading our seed tray situation this year. Instead of constantly buying the cheap ones, we're going to be investing in something a little more durable, long lasting, and sort of take the financial hit this year and hopefully
Yeah,
get more usage out of them.
that's what I did last year with the ones I got is yeah,
Yeah.
they're 4x6. The bottom like inch and a half is silicone, where and then the top half is a harder plastic. So like after you plant the seeds, once they start growing, they literally you can just like pop
Pop
them
them
right
out.
out.
That's
And
cool.
they wash them off. They're the hard plastic wash, and they're great. I used them last year. I'm going to be reusing them again this year. I also save a lot of those the cheap plastic ones. I do save them to where if I really start getting ambitious with my how much I do, I can start using those as well.
Yeah, we still have a lot of those, and they may come into play. But Meg is going to go probably tomorrow to Gardeners to make the selection for us and make that investment. Speaking of
Yeah, I got mine off
investments.
the Amazon last year, and because they were the cheapest source. As much as I hate buying from Amazon, it's cheap.
Okay. If you can find those for me and send me a link, I'd really appreciate it. I've got free shipping on Amazon for like 5 more hours because of an investment I made yesterday. Things are.
See, I actually they got me with like, hey, you just made a purchase. If you pay, it was like $2.99 for the next month, you get free shipping for the next month. I'm just like, I'm buying just enough stuff that $2.99 is worth it. And I've also been watching stuff on Prime as well, so I'm making use of it.
When we do it, we let things pile up, and then they're like, okay, you have free shipping for 24 hours now. So, and then if
See,
something pops into our head.
they had gotten me with that for a little bit, and then now it's like, then they finally were like, okay, fine. This is like your third order in 3 weeks. Here, $2.99, you get Prime for the next month. And it's like, hey, I have shows I've been backing up and wanting to watch. It's so I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna utilize this. And yeah, I actually because I like I we talked about it in the our pre-recorded episodes, like I brought a popcorn maker.
Yes. Well, and as fascinating as all of this is to our listeners, I gotta tell you, I ordered my electric fence and charger
Nice.
and a new tool to sort of up our broom handle game. But yeah, the chi we're moving forward with chickens. I'm gonna drag around our flower cart so that we can start converting it into a coop. This week, maybe next week as well. Because we got to redo the roof and put sides on it and all of that stuff. So
Yep.
we're doing the mobile chicken coop thing where it's on wheels. I think I'm going to detail some of that build. I'll record it and sort of post it on various social medias and stuff. But like the most exciting thing for me is today is the date of recording is the first meeting of the Verscher Artisan and Farmers Market, which I am a part of founding. And date of release, the 5th. Ha! Date of release applications will be available. I'll be posting them on Instagram, Facebook, and local listservs. But if you are listening to this and you would like to get involved in the Verscher Artisan and Farmers Market taking place Sundays from 12:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon, from 5:19 to 9:15, you can email us at VerscherMarket@gmail. Or if you want to talk about the show, you can just drop me a note in there too, BrokenShovel802 at Gmail. Either way, we'll get to me, and we'll get you an application and get you out into the Verscher Town Green with me.
Yes, I mean you're even getting. I might even be selling chickens.
Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yes.
You could meet both of us as
Yes.
exciting as we are. You come to the Verscher Artisan Farmer and Farmers
And
Market.
I hope. Well, I also hope to be able to, by the end of the summer, be selling my salsa of a particular color.
Yeah, well, when you start getting out there with homemade stuff, I might have to make you get your own table.
Okay. I'm gonna take, like, I think the first year, I don't think I'm going to be able to make enough to sell other than to be like, hey, I have this yellow salsa in some in a bag of chips for people to try. And then, hey, if it does, if people say they like it, maybe I'll sell it next year.
Right. Well, I mean, that's how I ended up in the hot sauces, right? Like, I just was like, you know what? I there's an office full of people that I mostly like, and I'm gonna try this out. I've been doing it for myself every once in a while, and I bottled them up, got a really good response, and now I make a pretty steady amount of money on hot sauce. I don't have a single market that I attend where I don't sell out of it. So. So I'm making lots of it now. but yeah, I don't know. I got spring in my veins right now. I'm, you know, I'm just generically excited. We took a good hike up the property this morning. It was just beautiful, just absolutely gorgeous out. So, I hope people are getting to enjoy the weather.
Yes. I'm excited for spring, but at the same time, we have the major push at work that starts in the spring that I'm
dreading.
I mean, it's not going to be fun because, and yeah, I won't get into it on here. We can talk about it after we stop recording.
but yeah, so I don't know. I'm just really excited about the markets and all that stuff that's going on. So I'm kind of an unstoppable force of positivity right now. So, but yeah, I think that's it for the show. Next week, we will be talking about the EPA in many different ways. So that will be fun. And hopefully pretty soon we'll get down to water and mineral rights. And as the as spring evolves throughout March and April, we're going to talk about bud season.
And yeah, we'll be talking more and more about our homestead projects that we're starting this spring because we both have very ambitious projects going.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a lot of that where our topics are sort of shrinking and we're talking more about what we're doing. You know, this show kind of ebbs and flows, doesn't it?
Yep.
So, but yeah, thanks everybody for listening and reach out, join the conversation.